Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thank you for joining us. Once again, we're joined by John Burns. John is the owner of John Burns Real Estate Consulting. He established that business in 2001, and he consults many of the major builders of our country. John, welcome again.
Thanks, Bruce.
Wanted to switch our discussion to the world of finance. How big a part did loose lending policies play in the housing boom of, say, 2000 to 2005?
Well, I think they played a huge role. If you look at what happened from 99 to 2003, interest rates fell, fixed rates fell from 8.5% to 5.5%. So that allowed a lot more people to get into the housing market.
Mm-hmm.
But from 2003 and maybe early 2004 on, interest rates are flat or have been rising. So that natural ability to recruit more renters into home ownership was not there. And so the subprime guys filled the void and took advantage of an opportunity there. I should also mention from 99 to 2003, home ownership rose from about 66.5% to 69%. It was a huge increase in home ownership.
Do you think that if we go back to a more normal qualifying standard, that there's a good chance that those numbers will revert to a more normal percentage ownership?
Yeah. Okay. I've calculated that we have probably about 2 million more homeowners than we should, and you can attribute that to falling interest rates and what happened in the subprime market.
Okay. In December of 2005, there was a document that was sent out. It was a loan guidance suggestion, if you will. I don't know if you want to put it under a term of suggestion. It had some pretty heavy authors, and
right.
they basically approached the lending business and said, we'd like you to respond and tell us why we should allow you to continue to loan people that do not prove they earn anything, have anything, and just because they have a high FICO score, they can own a home. What was your recall? What do you recall being the earliest the builders thought that this might be a problem, that the financing world was going to change, or did they really never figure that out until it already had?
Well, actually, you know, I mentioned this conference I spoke at last month. A year ago at that conference, one of the builders stood up, and I was on a panel with the head of home building lending from Countrywide, and he got up and said exactly that. Look, you guys are screwing up this business. You're making crazy mortgages, and we're going to have to pay the price someday for this. And the guy from Countrywide's response was, well, which one of your buyers do you not want me to make a loan to?
Okay.
So, I mean, certainly some people in the building industry have, especially the guys that are older, have seen this play through before. I mean, there was 125% loan-to-values in 1990. You know, that was the popular mortgage du jour.
Mm-hmm.
Then. Consolidate your credit card debt into a home. I think people had seen this before, but I think that I'm very confident in the consensus that they thought the world had changed to be no one would really need much of a down payment going forward, that the mortgage market had matured to that level.
One of those this time it's different statements.
And, you know, I think the jury's still out on whether it is different or not. I mean, clearly the subprime guys have blown up, but I'm hearing from my clients who've had a lot of subprime backlog that they're still able to get the loans made in one program or another. Just not typical subprime, some credit repair service or some silent second from some agency. I'm still trying to figure out where all this is coming from, but it has not been a disaster from my client's perspective yet.
You know, that's an interesting term yet, and that's to me what's missing sometimes is the inevitability of a series of events. Last month, this was February, Realty Track, I guess they calculated 16,500 NODs, Notices of Default, filed in California. You multiply that times 12, and you start looking at that when you have a downturn where you have a flat price market. You can have up to 50% of those turn into trustee sales, which then turn into REOs. if you end up with a hundred thousand REO year, it will represent 20% of our entire resale market for that year. So that is, unfortunately, what's already in the can, if you will. That's coming.
No, and I think that's the case too. But I think that was the case a year ago. I mean, we all have known for more than a year that there was no home price appreciation, that 70% of the borrowers in Southern California were getting adjustable rate loans. So what was going to happen when, and interest rates were up. So what was going to happen when somebody got a payment shock and had seen known home price appreciation? I mean, I've known for a while, you've known for a while, and my clients have known for a while that this foreclosure situation was clearly going to rear its ugly head. What they have said, based on past experience, and I think there is some truth to this, is that it tends to be very submarket specific. I know it grows everywhere, but there are certain areas that are usually the outlying areas where you'll find just massive amounts of foreclosures. And, you know, East Palmdale in the last cycle, I think you could have bought homes for below replacement cost.
Oh, absolutely.
Moreno Valley. And although there was a price correction along the coasts, they believe, and I believe too, that it was more driven by job losses. Although foreclosures definitely had a dampening effect on the market, that it was more driven by people just losing their job.
Okay. And this time it'll probably just be driven by they can't make the payment.
Right.
In California, you mentioned something that it was very easy for a buyer of a new home to walk away from a deposit. In California, it's also very easy for them to walk away from a mortgage because there's no residual effect. The lender can't chase them around. Have you noticed in states where they do have recourse that foreclosures are less likely? I'm just curious if you've ever pursued that at all.
You know, I haven't really, and I probably should.
Okay. Because I do think that'll be one of California's problems, is that it is very easy to walk away and not have any negative scenario except for, you know, you have bad credit for a while.
Has the change in the bankruptcy laws made it tougher or not?
No. Actually, I did a lot of research on that. Once the lender chooses to take it through the trustee sale process, there really isn't any kind of recourse, whether it's an IRS bill or a bankruptcy issue. It just doesn't exist because the loan doesn't have recourse at that point. And that's legally, I guess, how it works out.
Yeah. Now, there's another interesting issue that I've been asking a lot of questions about that's changed in the mortgage business, and that's the emergence of the securitization in the mortgage business.
Mm-hmm.
Where now these pools of loans might be owned by the Chinese government or CalPERS or some pension fund somewhere. In the last cycle, banks were more willing. I believe they learned their lesson from the last cycle. They didn't want to own the real estate. They were more willing to take a haircut and do a workout with the borrower, maybe keep them in the house and just the bank take the hit. I don't think that exists as much in this market because now you've got what's called a mortgage service provider who has to follow the letter of the law based on these securities and just kick people out of their homes. It's an interesting question for me. Is just, can they work with these folks and provide them a new loan and maybe a discounted loan? Because the bank's going to take probably a bigger hit if they end up owning the real estate and trying to sell it.
See, yes, it's a very interesting topic because a lot of times these people are over encumbered and didn't have anything into it in the first place.
Right.
So you're looking at an owner that has to look at his financial situation and sort of, why would I go ahead and along with a program where I'm over encumbered on a payment I can barely survive with? It just seems that the practical side of it would make the result be a foreclosure no matter what they tried to do.
Yeah, but if I'm the banker, the last thing I want is owned vacant real estate. They had a lot of vandalism problems in the last cycle too.
Sure.
Because maybe that's a $80,000 write-off on my mortgage. Can I restructure the deal and give this person a lower payment and forgive some of the debt, which I understand causes tax problems, but that's going to occur anyway, and restructure this or do a short sale, mm-hmm. where I just take all the proceeds, and, you know, that's less painful to the bank than ending up with the keys to the property usually.
That's true. It's going to be a loss either way, but that's the short sales will be very prevalent in the next couple of years, but so will the REOs, unfortunately. You deal with the builders on the finance side. What percentage of loans that were funded, let's say, in the last 3 years, would be considered either subprime or Alt-A borrowers?
You know, I don't know those off the top of my head. In fact, I just had one of my staff members do a map that I'll send you, Bruce.
Okay.
We plotted the percentage of down payment by zip code.
That was my next question.
Which, because, you know, it's hard to get good loan data, but because you have to record it at the recorder's office, you know what the mortgage is and you know what the price is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the overall percentages, but they were very high. And in areas such as the central part of Orange County, Santa Ana, Anaheim, Garden Grove, stuck out on this map as having like more than half of the buyers last year put nothing down. It was insane. Whereas along the coast, the percentages were much smaller, which makes sense because those people are generally move-up buyers and have equity from their previous home to put down.
Correct. So a lot of the volume that was created in the last 3 years was really created by the 100% finance plans. And what about stated income? Was that also very prevalent?
Yeah, it was, but I don't have the stats on that.
Okay.
There was a report that's been circulating on the Internet. You can probably get it done by CS First Boston. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, I've read that.
Okay. Well, they've got a lot of those sorts of statistics in it.
Yes, I'm pretty familiar with both of those statistics, and they're very high percentages. They're a very high percentage in California as far as stated income and the 100%. We watch the foreclosures every day, and lenders that have the 20% seconds are getting 0 100% of the time.
Wow.
So they're losing on a $500,000 sale, $100,000, and then the property is still reverting to the lender most of the time. So I don't know how many 100 grand hits you can take, but...
Are you noticing geographic concentration there, or is it pretty widespread?
I would say the Inland Empire and San Diego are leading the pack. Orange County condos are very prevalent in going into foreclosure, so you have probably some pretty big price hits coming to the condo world in Orange County.
Yeah, no, I mean we've definitely seen that it's very heavy at the entry level buyer level, which makes sense. So it's much more concentrated in lower priced areas than higher priced.
In Orange County, there's not so much of a what they call overhang because they just simply didn't have enough builder lots. But in San Diego and Riverside and San Bernardino, is that as severe a problem as it was in the 89 to, say, 91 time frame?
I think Inland Empire's got the same problems as back then. The buyers there are very, very stretched. I think what's unique about San Diego, it was the condo conversion capital of California.
Mm-hmm.
So I think of a lot of those condo conversions is where you're seeing the biggest problems. Orange County, for really zoning reasons, just didn't have as many condo conversions.
Builders are currently offering either healthy commissions or discounts or incentives to move inventory. What percentage are houses really being discounted to accomplish the sale in this market in California?
You know, I'll throw out a number, but obviously it varies a lot by community.
Yes.
I would say builders are probably 20% off what they thought they'd be selling the home for.
Mm.
And the reason I say it that way is you can walk into a new home office today and definitely negotiate, and they will be offering incentives and discounts and those sorts of things. But they may have already taken 13 to 15% off of the price, so you know that your wiggle room from now on might only be 4 or 5%.
Mm-hmm.
I think anyone who shopped new homes and resale homes a year ago and is shopping them today would just notice a massive difference in what a better deal the new home market is versus the resale market.
Okay, now let's cover that. What about the people that bought that same house within a year? They bought the first phase and now phase three is on sale. Is that a very big price difference? Or do they kind of do that with incentives and try to make the price be supported by some other means?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of reasons. But when it happens in an existing community, they offer incentives and do go that route more to appease the people that have already purchased in their community, also so they don't destroy the appraisal, if you will.
Isn't it also true that they many times are the lender, or they have an interest in the lender that's made loans on the properties?
That's a very complicated question. I mean, they some of the big ones do have their own mortgage companies, mm-hmm. but if they make 100% loan on a home, the accountants don't allow them to book the revenue because you really haven't sold anything. So, you know, I'm not sure if the builders really have been very involved in making 100% loans, because they can't book the revenue if they do that.
Okay.
And that can vary a lot by builder, but most of them have partnered up with another company. Countrywide probably has the majority of the market share, who've been doing the loans for the builders.
I just happened to notice a lawsuit filed against Beazer, and this was March 29th. I don't know if you're familiar with this or not.
Yeah, in Charlotte.
Yeah, I'm talking about...
Or Raleigh.
Now, this is... It says San Diego, but that may be where the news was. But talking about the reason being that the lending side of it was so loose that it really created sales that the buyer had no hope of making the payments once the payment adjusted, and therefore they're claiming that skewed the earnings of the company. So I guess my question is, do you see that coming down the pike for other builders and being a problem?
Well, the one thing I know with 100% certainty is when a downturn occurs, the lawyers come out.
That's right, and they look for somebody to blame.
And you know, I mean, the type of abuse you talk about was probably far more prevalent in the resale market, but there's not a great lawsuit in the resale market if you're trying to sue somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a great one if you've got a publicly traded builder you can sue. And if it's a homeowners association and you can rally a whole bunch of people in the association against it, you've got yourself a lawsuit. So I'm expecting to see a lot of that. Whether or not it's valid or not, I don't have any opinion on.
Okay. When we talk about a downturn, are all price ranges affected? So builders building the million-dollar-plus homes and the $300,000 homes, are they all affected, even if it's affected differently? Or is there any price range that's just sort of safe?
No, I think they're all affected. I mean, the housing market is a pyramid where, you know, there's a few luxury homes at the top of the pyramid, but it's the entry-level homes way down at the bottom that keep the home market stable. So the whole market moves because if you're a luxury guy, you're selling your home to somebody else who's selling their home to somebody else who works all the way down. Interestingly, right now, some of the luxury communities are doing pretty well. But that's because I think they're catering to people that just have some extreme affluence and, you know, don't even care what mortgage rates are. They may not even need a mortgage.
That's true. Looking back, when did land prices peak in California?
Land prices, we could have another hour-long show on that one, Bruce.
Okay.
land prices are a function of home prices.
Okay.
So a builder will look at land and he'll say, okay, here's what I think I can sell the homes for, here's my costs, here's a reasonable profit margin, and that's what I'll pay you for the land. So when they start offering incentives or they start dropping prices, what they're willing to pay for land drops, and I would say that would have been the fall of 2005 as well. However, land sellers are very reluctant to drop their price or sell the land for what less than what their neighbor did, so there really has been very little land activity because there's a huge disconnect between what someone will pay and what someone wants.
Okay. Are there as many finished building lots in this market as there were in 89 to 91?
I don't believe so, and here's why. There were fewer permits pulled, so the housing volume was not as high. It got up to 50,000, or the same peak it got in 89 in Riverside, San Bernardino, but it was less than half as many homes being constructed in Orange County. and in L.A. So, I mean, and the savings and loan industries at that time were allowing you to build 75 homes at a time in a phase. Mm. And the construction lending and the builders actually been pretty disciplined this time with the levels of construction. I don't believe the inventory levels in Southern California are nearly as high as they were in the last cycle, but I know that the national stats are saying that they're nationally it's as high as it's ever been.
Okay. I think that's probably true. We probably have a more across-the-board problem than maybe we've ever had, and that's because the percentage of owners went up from mid-60s to almost 70, so they,
right.
They're probably going to have to disappear from the ranks of ownership for us to get back to normal. Okay, I'm going to just mention a number of categories that have an effect on real estate prices in California, and with 10 being most important, 1 being least important, how would you rate the following? And I think we already know the answer to the first one. Affordability?
10.
Okay. Now, is that always a 10, or is it a 10 now just because we've crammed our way into where we can't afford another dollar?
Will you let me answer that with a long answer?
Okay.
Running out of time here. I mean, I look at a balanced housing market. The analogy I use is a three-legged stool, where you want all legs of the stool to be solid for the market to be on strong grounds.
Okay.
The demand leg, which is population growth, job growth, and sales volume, is on okay ground. The sales volume is terrible, but the job growth is there. The supply leg, which is building permits and resale homes, building permits is high in the Inland Empire, but not on the coasts, but the listings are very high. So that's a wobbly leg of the stool. And then the third leg is I call it the investment leg, which includes affordability, but also, as you were talking about earlier, the negative media, the confidence in the investment you're making.
Mm-hmm.
And that's abysmal right now.
Okay.
So I think all three legs, you want them all to be stable. Right now, you know, job growth would be a 10 too.
Okay.
You know.
What about consumer spending?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I'd say that maybe that's a 5 or a 6.
I guess what I was sort of getting at is I don't know how it will continue, because I think it's continued up till now because people have been taking out equity and they're losing the ability to do that, and we don't typically save very much. So I guess so.
It's clearly consumers stop spending. I think that'll result in job losses.
Correct.
So, you know, they're all kind of correlating.
Right, and that's go back to that inevitability. Since we have a zero or sub-zero savings rate, I don't know how, when we borrow $600 billion, let's say in 2006, we won't be able to reproduce that in 2007. So there's going to have to be a disconnect between access to money and what we're capable of spending. And I suppose if you end up having a lot of foreclosures, you also have a lot of people that may not have credit to buy things for a while as well.
Well, I think that's true, but I think you also need to remember that, 80% of all homeowners probably bought their home in 2003 or earlier and have their job. So I'm not sure, even though the value of what their neighbors sell in their home for, I'm not sure they're going to significantly curtail their spending habits. I mean, clearly there's this people that have been using their house as an ATM machine.
Correct.
But, you know, whether that's 2% of the market or 50, you know, my guess is it's closer to 2 than to 50, but maybe I'm hanging out with the wrong people.
Well, actually, just statistically, it is higher than the 2% by a long shot, actually.
Okay.
There really have been a lot of people borrowing their money out. There are substantial amount of people that own homes free and clear, though, so there's definitely stability. Well, John, unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank you very much for your time. It's been a very valuable couple of interviews, and hopefully we can do it again and maybe once again talk about something positive when we do so.
Yeah, I look forward to your report that home prices are going to double up in the next 7 years, like you wrote in, was it 98?
Well, tune in to about 211, like you said.
Okay.
All right, John, thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week at 5:30 here on News Talk 590 KTIE.